The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. And we're also very proud to have Michael O'Neill back on the program. He is the Vice President of Legal Affairs at the Landmark Legal Foundation, Landmark Legal. How you doing this morning, Michael? Welcome back to the show.
I'm good, Bill. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Have you ever had a bigger fire hose of Supreme Court decisions, man, to be able to talk about the last couple of weeks? It's just been astounding, hasn't it?
Well, it's funny. It started really with the Dobbs decision. Remember, that's the decision that overturned Planned Parenthood versus Casey and Roe versus Wade a couple of years ago. That was the leaked opinion. So it's kind of every June we kind of just have to buckle up and get ready for the ride, because you're going to see the Roberts Court, who's doing yeoman's work there for restoring the balance of power and restoring the separation of powers to our country. But boy, oh boy, the left sure goes crazy when they don't get their way.
Yeah, speaking of crazy, I just received an email from Indivisible. Are you familiar with the Indivisible people by chance?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay, though. Indivisible, you know, a hard left group out here on the West Coast. And it says, Indivisibles, yesterday the Supreme Court made the prospect of a second Trump presidency far more frightening. By granting presidents broad immunity for the acts they take in office, the mega majority on the court isn't just helping Trump escape accountability for the crimes he's already committed. They're giving him free rein to rule as a dictator if he ever makes it back to the Oval Office. In other words, boy, we better start cheating on the election again, Michael, because, you know, when you're dealing with literal Hitler, it's by any means necessary, right? I guess.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, when you demonize your opponent, I mean, the Biden administration has mobilized the full force of the Department of Justice to engage in this lawfare, this unceasing lawfare that is interminable, and it's just been going on. I said before, and I've been thinking about this, to the extent to which, look, if the left and the Biden administration had spent a little more time focusing on their agenda and focusing on what they've done and improving the lives of ordinary Americans instead of getting Trump through all of these malicious prosecutions, then maybe they'd be doing a little bit better. Maybe they would have come to the realization that their candidate is non compos mentis and isn't fit to be running for president again. But instead, they're so hyper-focused on Donald Trump, they've kind of made their bed at this point. Now they're going to have to go and lie in it, right?
Yeah, and it does appear that the soft coup attempt from last Thursday, and I really do think that the early debate was designed to do this, to kind of a test for President Biden, even though he failed it. It appears that they're starting to back away and perhaps circle the wagons and maybe realize that this is the horse they're probably going to have to ride unless he wants to quit. And there's been no evidence of that. I wanted to touch, though, on on the Trump v. United States, which is what you're focusing on again at Landmark Legal. And it's not necessarily a really controversial decision if you look at history. And people talk about imperial presidencies, et cetera. Unfortunately, whether we like it or not, the presidency was sort of designed with a little bit of king-like power, wouldn't that be? And it's always kind of been that way, hasn't it, really, when you look at the history of it all?
Yeah, and it's funny because we've never really had – this is a case of first impression. This is the court breaking new ground, constitutionally new ground. There's never been a criminal prosecution of a former president. Mm-hmm. And so the court was really kind of dragged into having to make this analysis and perform this analysis and engage in it. So let's unpack the decision a little bit. First of all, let's dispense with all the hysteria. The president does not have the power to order the assassinate, you know, to order SEAL Team 6 to assassinate his political rivals. Mm-hmm. The president doesn't have the power to accept bribes. The president doesn't have the power to run roughshod over the Constitution or the rule of law. The court was very clear about that, and the court essentially had, you know, established three buckets, if you will. There are the instances when the president is exercising his core constitutional functions, his Article 2 of the United States constitutional function. And for those contexts, and again, those are within a very narrow context of conduct, very narrowly defined. And for that, he does enjoy absolute immunity. And this is in the context of his exercising his pardon power. This is the removal and supervision of his officers in the executive branch. And he does, again, these are narrowly defined powers, specific powers that he enjoys absolute immunity from, and that's because to ensure the proper separation of powers that the other branches of government can't interfere with his exercising of that authority. Well, then again, the rubber meets the road in the second bucket, if you will. This is the official act. And with regard to that, there is a presumption of immunity, a rebuttable presumption of immunity. But so what that means is the president will enjoy immunity for, again, subject to rebuttal from a prosecution, but he'll enjoy immunity when he's operating within the context of his statutory or constitutional authority for those other acts. So if,
but in other words, he's within his constitutional authority. It's there's a caveat there, right? That's what you're bringing up, right?
Exactly. His statutory or constitutional authority. And because there has to be some sort of balancing test as an act, because you have the interaction of Congress, of the legislative branch passing a law, and then the president executing the law. And so the context has to be whether he's within the context exercising his executive authority. And if he's doing that, if he's carrying out an executive function, then immunity will attach. And this is really important. Let's think about this, Bill. Bill, why this is important. And I go back to this really important example. And really, I don't hear anybody else talking about it, but think about 9/11, right? Think about what happened on 9/11
Yep.
and that terrible morning. So what happened was all the planes were, thousands of planes were flying across the American airspace. President Bush had to act quickly. We didn't know what was going on. He had to order all the planes immediately grounded.
Yep.
And then he also had to give the terrible order where he directed the U.S. military, the U.S. Air Force and Navy, to fighter jets to shoot down civilian airlines that weren't grounded. Fortunately, it never had to happen. It never actually happened. But President Bush had to give that terrible order because he was acting within the context of his executive function. He was acting as the chief executive of the United States, the commander in chief of the law of the
military
forces, and had to protect America. So it's imperative that the president have this kind of immunity for his official acts, his executive function acts.
Because you really can't function with the court looking over
right.
your shoulder at every time, or you can't make those kind of decisions sometimes. And they're not always good. You know, and we understand that. But sometimes in emergencies, this is the sort of stuff that happens. Now, the only real punishment for the president constitutionally is the impeachment process. Is it not? Really?
Well, as president, the political, you know, the impeachment process is the political solution to this. And the way to hold the president accountable politically is to initiate the impeachment proceedings. And that's specified clearly in the United States in the Constitution. But let's keep in mind also, let's look at the decision. It wasn't a complete 100% win for Donald Trump yesterday. You know, the Supreme Court remanded it to the district court for an analysis of developing a more fulsome, more complete record of the facts in the context of this official versus unofficial presumption of immunity.
Is this also going to affect things like the Georgia electors case? Because you could argue that President Trump was not talking to Brad Raffensperger, I think is his name there, and saying, hey, I want you to find the votes. You're not really talking as a constitutional officer of the United States. You're talking as a candidate in that particular case, right? And so you could see how that could be adjudicated differently, correct?
Absolutely. And you make arguments for pro and con. You know, you just proffered the argument that the prosecution was making. He was making the argument. He was talking to Raffensperger in the context of a presidential of a candidate, not as a president. I could conversely make the argument that he was talking to Raffensperger because there was evidence of voter malfeasance and voter fraud, and
right.
he wanted the chief electoral officer in a jurisdiction to investigate those allegations. So there's, you know, lawyers in front of courts make pro and con arguments every day, and it's up to the judge to make a ruling on the legality of it. And again, what's going to happen here is there's going to be, you know, the conversation between Donald Trump and Mike Pence is going to be subject to this analysis of the lower courts. The conversation, as you just said, between Donald Trump and state officials. The speech he gave on the Ellipse, that, again, I would argue with you that that's a speech given to the public as president of the United States. He's exercising an executive action there. So there's going to be the development of a more complete and more fulsome record. So there are going to be hearings at the district court level that are going to be focused on this immunity issue. And then those presumably are going to be subject to an appeal and go up the level. But again, the Supreme Court really told here, the bottom line is the Supreme Court told the lower courts, hey, these are important constitutional issues that are imperative for the future of our country. And you can't just rush up to the court just because you want to get this done for political purposes. The court said you need to take your time. These are decisions for posterity that are going to be here with us for decades forward. And you need to make sure you do your job and weigh these issues accordingly.
When it comes right down to it, Michael O'Neill, by the way, Vice President of Legal Affairs at Landmark Legal Foundation, didn't the Supreme Court essentially in Trump v. the United States just give an order to what has always kind of been known about presidential power when it comes to like an implied immunity? Would you agree with that or disagree?
I think I would agree, and I hearken back to something you know as the hidden law or the quiet or the unspoken law, gentlemen's agreements here. I mean, everything doesn't necessarily have to be dragged, and this is kind of the problem here with the lawfare that's waved against Trump. Look at all the new constitutional law we're dealing with in the last 3 years. People like me, because of the left waging this unceasing war against Donald Trump, instead of you know winning in the avenue of the political realm, they've tried to lawfare this. So I think you're right. There has been – everybody's kind of understood that there has been some sort of immunity. Look, there's cases in the past, Nixon v. Fitzgerald, the Clinton cases, which dealt with presidential immunity in the civil context, the subpoena power, et cetera. But really, it's never been this illuminating for the country. And so I really would rather have not this case had come down, obviously. From a constitutional perspective, it gives me a lot to talk about and a lot to analyze. But I really wish that it had been something that kind of existed in the ether that, yes, there were some bounds to it, but we don't know precisely. But it's going to kind of work as a check on the presidents in the future. So, yeah, there's always been this acknowledgement of some degree of presidential immunity within the criminal context. But now it's really out there, everybody to look at and dragged out into the open.
Yeah. As you say here, the president's not above the law. But he's not going to be dragged into court for doing his core constitutional powers and duties. He's just not going to do that. Okay.
That's exactly right, and that's necessary for him to exercise. Again, he has to think about the context of 9/11. The president has to act vigorously and actively, you know, setting aside whatever you think of Biden, but it's imperative that the president have that authority to do that without the sort of Damocles hanging over his head that I'm going to be subject to criminal prosecution for what I'm doing.
Now, Michael, I'm going to float, given that even one of the Supreme Court dissenters, Justice Dissenting, had mentioned this thing about, could you then drone and murder your opponent, your political opponent?
Right.
And so let me just go with that. Let's say that a bad president wanted to do that, okay? And so I'm going to send a predator drone, and we're going to just destroy the headquarters of my opponent, kind of like a banana republic sort of thing. But then you think about the power of impeachment here and what a legal friend of mine was just mentioning, and it makes sense to me. I want to see what you think. Judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold any office. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment. Okay, so that's the impeachment power, Article 1, Section 3, Paragraph 7. So you have a bad president who drones his opponent and kills him or her, right? So that person is impeached. That president gets impeached, convicted, removed from office, and then that person would likely be liable legally, you know, after the fact.
Certainly. Yeah, subject to criminal prosecution. And again, I go back to my test. Is he exercising an executive action or is there any kind of statutory or constitutional authority for the president to commit a drone strike on his political opponent? No, there is no authority.
No.
He's not functioning under the auspices of executive authority, either derived from the Constitution or from the statute. Therefore, he is subject to prosecution. That is an unofficial act that is subject to criminal prosecution and indictment and the entire process. So, yeah, I mean, the hysteria, you know, it's just dumbing down the American people when you have these caterwauling from the left and this hysteria saying that somehow the president is now above the law. The court is very clear that there's open questions all over the place, that they did not foreclose the prosecution. It's just, look, presidential immunity exists, and you have to analyze the facts alleged in the indictment within the proper context. You have to respect the rule of law going forward.
Michael, I really appreciate the take on this, and thank you for trying to soothe the exploding heads. I don't know if they're listening to you.
Yeah, they're not.
But
good luck.
Yeah,
but hopefully the people who listen to your radio, you know, listen to your show with open mind can call, you know, fall for the nonsense.
Where do you think we head in the future here now at this point? Will presidents be more careful? Or is this just something where, you know, like I mentioned before, you already had this kind of power and you're probably not going to do anything differently? How do you see this?
I mean, I think that they're going to look, when you're the president, I can only imagine the emergencies and the role that the presidents have to play. And I hope and pray that they don't have to be when they're making decisions for the safety of the American people and for the welfare of the American people, they don't have to concern themselves you know, in the heat of battle, when the bullets are flying, they don't have to concern themselves with whether they're going to be subject to a politically motivated criminal prosecution after they leave office.
Very good. I hope
and pray that that's not a factor that factors into their decision tree.
And I hope you're right about that. Michael O'Neill, VP of Legal Affairs at Landmark Legal Foundation. I'll put all your information up. And you have a blog or a Substack that you do, too? I just want to make sure.
Oh, I don't. But interestingly, your listeners should go to our website, landmarklegal.org. We have a really interesting take on Justice Thomas's concurrent opinion in this. And he talks about the constitutionality of the appointment and whether the appointment of the special counsel is permissible under the Constitution. So I really encourage your listeners to read Justice Thomas's concurrence and also check out the analysis on landmarklegal.org.
Oh, will do. Michael, a final question I have for you is there any way that we can get maybe a clone for Justice Thomas? I'm getting concerned that he's one of the only true originalists left. Is that true or not? I mean, I just love what that guy comes up with, really.
We have some strong justices on the United States Supreme Court right now. We've had some welcome, and I'd be happy to talk about it later at a different time, but we've had some welcome rollback of the administrative state, some really good opinions from the United States Supreme Court. So a lot of good is coming out of at least one of our existing institutions.
Yeah, but you got to know, though, he wants to retire at some point, right?
I hope not.
Yeah.
I hope not.
Yeah, stay on, Clarence, stay on. But thank you very much, Michael. Always a good talk. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too now. 731, Michael O'Neill, landmarklegal.org. Great, great organization.
Hey, it's Bryce. KMED invites you to Discount Fireworks Superstore's Big Block Party Tuesday night. Enter to win a 60-second shopping spree, and there's free fireworks for the kids from 7 to 9. The Block Party is happening at a Discount Fireworks Superstore near you in South Medford, West Medford, Ashland, Phoenix, Central Point, White City, Grants Pass, and Cave Junction. Don't miss it. Enter to win a 60-second shopping spree and free fireworks for the kids from 7 to 9. It's Discount Fireworks Superstore's Big Block Party Tuesday night.
Hey, ladies, come in and take a look at our Anna Zuckerman collection at Father and Son Jewelry.
It certainly is stunning. The jewelry has been worn by actresses on the red carpet at the Oscars.
Ladies can look like $1 million bucks and no one can tell the difference between the synthetic lab-created stones and gems. And the settings are breathtaking.
Come be dazzled by the Anna Zuckerman collection at Father and Son Jewelry on Jackson between Riverside and Central.
Hi, this is Dwayne Barkley, owner at American Rancher Garage, a full-service auto repair shop. We get numerous questions that begin with, hey, do you work on? So to put it simply, if it's between your license plates, we probably work on that. Call, stop by, or text us through our website at AmericanRancher.com. Stop by Biddle Road, right across the street from Elmer's, or call us at 541-499-6673. American Rancher Garage, we are united through service.
Saving big, I can dig on just the things I need.
Oregon E-Deals has saved the Rogue Valley truckloads of money over the years on things you buy and use often. All Beauty Mark salon certificates are half off. Also, save big on Diner 62, Malello's Coffee, and Freddy's Diner. This and much more available exclusively at OregonEDeals.com.
I'm hooked on OregonEDeals.com. I'm saving big.
106.3 KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show.
By the way, OregonEDeals.com is even better than the way Scuba Steve was describing it. It's like, you know, there are just so many ways to support local businesses, and you get a great discount. And it's stuff you're going to buy anyway. Like, one of my favorites is the $25 Artisan Bakery Cafe gift card. $25 and you pay $15. So you get $25 worth of beignets. Gosh, those beignets. And the pastries and the bread that they bake. Oh, gosh, just wonderful. Or the wraps. I mean, you get it all. And, of course, everybody loves the Cartwrights. Everybody loves the Cartwrights and more. And $85 for $100 in meat. And, you know, with the price of meat these days, anytime you can save on great protein, that's the way to do it. And, by the way, those Cartwrights are good both at the Medford and the Grants Pass store. Great stuff, OregonEDeals.com. Let me go to Bonnie. Hey, Bonnie, you're in Grants Pass. You were driving to Medford down I-5 the other day, and what was your overall impression? A little concern, huh? What are you thinking?
It was yesterday, Bill. I went over to see my son and coming back, and when I was looking, going over, I thought, geez, I can't see the sweet peas. The sheet grass is like 4 to 5 feet tall all along each side of I-5 and down the median.
Wow.
The media, or what you call it. anyway, they got some grass there, but somebody ought to get out and take a look. I come home, and I was kind of nervous. I thought, geez, one spark, just one spark, and this stuff is going to take off with a little breeze and go over and hit all that madrones and all that stuff through there.
Oh, yeah, once it heads up the hills. Yeah, you're right. And,
oh, yeah.
And those areas, and you see, the thing is, those areas get, they grow every year. We had a really wet winter and a really wet early spring, too, and I imagine that that grew pretty well, didn't it?
Yeah, but, Bill, I remember, I've lived here a long time, I remember when they took the tractors with the sickle on the side, and they kept that down. It looked great, you know, and we didn't have this problem.
I wonder if, is this an ODOT service, do you think?
I called the forestry department. Well, it's not my job, man, you know. But anyway, she was telling me what all we can't do in our yard. Can't mow, blah, blah, blah. So then I tried ODOT, and I got them too late. So I'm going to try them again. I don't know who to call, you know, Ghostbusters. But what are they telling us right now? 4th of July is coming up, and you know you're going to have somebody's going to throw out a cigarette, a spark's going to come off one of them trucks.
Yeah.
You know, anything can go wrong. That's going to, Alamino will look like it's just not going to be good.
Yeah, being a little extra careful and vigilant would be a great plan for right now. I'm wondering if maybe the earlier heat maybe got a jump on perhaps when ODOT or whatever controlling authority on Interstate 5 ends up taking care of the mowing. If they if the mowing was designed to come a little bit later, thinking that and not contemplating such heat in the earlier part.
I told that lady at the forces, I said, look, they got lights on those little tractors. They can mow at night. But, I mean, somebody ought to take a ride. Just go like 4 or 5 miles out of Medford, see what you got.
Okay, I'll have to take a look. You know, a lot of times when I'm driving down I-5 between Medford and Grants Pass or Ashland, you know, all the grass on the sides, you just kind of,
ignore it.
You're just on your way concentrating on driving, you know, that sort of thing.
But the sweet peas are in bloom. And used to, you can see them, you know, the wild sweet peas.
Yeah.
This is just totally dangerous. All the way to Rogue River, you'll see it.
Duly noted.
Anyway,
thank you for the call.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. And hopefully cool heads will prevail there. Okay. Let me go to line two. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
It's Joel over here at the Iron Gate Mud Puddle.
Hey, Joel. How's the Iron Gate Mud Puddle today?
Well, the boys with the big bulldozers and excavators are chomping away at the old Iron Gate Dam. they made some pretty good progress. They got about half of it chewed up.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I understand there's how many states are on the voting machine? Half of them?
All the states have some form of a voting machine at this point. I don't think we have any of the states that I'm aware of that are big on paper ballots and in-person voting, do you?
Well, yeah, there's my thing. I've come up with, at least in my brain, a way to help.
I could be wrong.
If there's a controversy over the election after voting day, if everyone that gets a mail-in ballot simply takes a picture with their cell phone or whatever of how they voted so that later they could retrieve it and say, well, look, this is what I sent in the ballot and I voted this way.
But can you prove if it was tabulated that way? That's where we're not allowed to question it, right? It's how it was tabulated. It's an interesting suggestion, and I don't think there's no harm in it, but given that the West Coast states have made it very opaque, very difficult to really dig into it, and it's not your county clerks. It's not your county clerks at all. It's not that at all. It's the rules from a corrupt Secretary of State enabled by a arguably corrupt, democratically controlled legislature, too. We got a lot of work here. Appreciate the call there. Herman, Josephine County Republican Party, former Josephine, Oregon, rather, Republican Party chair and current Josephine County Commissioner, one of three. We're going to join with him here in a couple of minutes, too, after news.
Hi, it's John at Welburn's Weapons. The only thing better than shooting is shooting with a suppressor. Welburn's is Southern Oregon's suppressor headquarters, stocking models from Silencer Co., Dead Air, Griffin Armament, Rugged, Q, Thunderbeast, and many more. And we can order practically any suppressor on the market. Check in with us for monthly incentives to save on suppressors, too. Come see the suppressor experts. Welburn's Weapons on Crater Lake Highway, just south of White City.
News is sponsored by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. The hottest weather of the year is arriving in Oregon on the 4th of July. The National Weather Service says there's a heat risk for the state Thursday through Sunday. In southern Oregon, an excessive heat watch takes effect Thursday for possible temperatures up to 110 degrees. Central Oregon also expects to see triple-digit highs this weekend. With hot weather in the forecast across Oregon, the state fire marshal is worried fireworks will spark fires. Many cities and counties have tighter restrictions than state law. Oregon law prohibits fireworks that fly in the air, move more than 12 feet on the ground, or explode. Jacksonville made HGTV's list of the 50 most charming small towns in America. It's the gateway to the Applegate Valley Wine Trail and hosts the annual Brit Music and Arts Festival, which is considered to be one of the Northwest's premier outdoor summer performing arts events. Jacksonville has also been called one of America's 10 coolest small towns. Bill London, KMED News.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street in Phoenix.
Hi, it's Jolene with Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. We've got summer savings on quality Continental tires. Through August, get a $110 Visa prepaid card in the mail when you purchase a set of qualifying tires for your truck, SUV, or van. And there's 16 different popular styles to choose from, including Cross Contact, 4x4 Contact, Terrain Contact, and Premium Contact. Continental is one of our most recommended tire brands. So if you need a set for your truck, SUV, or van, come see us at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros in Phoenix.
Should you trust your drinking water on a do-it-yourself water test? I don't think so. At the Grants Pass Water Lab, we get a lot of calls about this. The kits are cheap and, yeah, they look easy, but the results can be confusing and still require a lab follow-up. Save your money and go straight to the water lab. Our equipment is much better at detection, and our staff sure beats a hard-to-read instruction packet. Find us online at thewaterlab.com or gpwaterlab.com.
Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Hey guys, did you know there's a generic form of Viagra that works just the same, but is 95% cheaper? And you can get it online? Go to hims.com/joy. Through Hims, you'll get a free medical consultation, discreet shipping if prescribed, and the process is 100% online. To start your free online visit, go to hims.com/joy. That's hims.com/joy.
Rock This Town by Stray Cats was released in 1981 and peaked at number 9 on the singles chart. Millett Construction can relate to this song because we rock your town one building at a time by firming up and solidifying foundations, leveling floors, and fixing the water problems that cause instability. So don't let those cracks in walls make you scream and shout. Millett will rock your place inside out. Visit MillettConstruction.com. By the way, Stray Cats may look and sound like they're from the UK, but they're actually from Long Island, New York.
Hi, I'm Paul Strandberg with Valley View Nursery, and I'm on KMED.
Josephine County Commissioner Herman Barrett-Chigger. We always talk politics, some of the news around the area here every Tuesday at about this time. And of course, Herman, what, you're up at about 2 in the morning and taking care of cattle? Is that kind of the way that works? You got a ranch, right?
Yeah, well, you don't know what time you're getting up around this place, but it's always early.
Well, it keeps you young, right? All that work, right? Not sitting around.
Yeah, right.
All right. Hey, exactly. Wanted to touch in on a couple of issues here. And first off, though, the OSU Extension Service last Wednesday, ended up defunding. Has there been a lot of pushback on it at this point? And was this more or less still the situation like you even talked about last Tuesday, that OSU Extension is not really giving up the goods on what they were going to do with the money? What do you say?
Well, you know, it's interesting. And for all those listeners out there that read the Daily Courier, now, like Paul Harvey says, you get the rest of the story, because the story was poorly written and the facts were skewed, obviously. Mr. Stoddard, you know, he always says they're not slanted. You know what kind of surprised me, Bill?
What's that?
Last Thursday at the debate, we had the worst presidential debate ever in the history of the United States, where every American, every person around the world that watched that all of a sudden realized that we have a feeble, declining, elderly man who is the most powerful person in the world and has the nuclear football at his disposal, and everybody is absolutely shocked But no, the Courier doesn't put that in there. Two papers in a row, top headlines above the fold, Bearchurger and West defund 4-H. That is more important than talking about, my God, look who we have for president. So anyways, Moving on, the 4-H extension service and how that's all tied together, what happened was there was a couple of clubs, 4-H clubs in Josephine County, that were very religious. One was called Joe's Place, Jesus Over Everything, and the other one was something Farmers, I don't know. But anyways, and since Oregon State University got into the, the
diversity, equity, inclusion.
And you don't have to believe me. If you go to their website, the first thing they talk about, how bad the founding of a land-grant university was a result of seizure of tribal lands. That's the first thing. Then the second thing you read in there is they are now have a new diversity, equity, and inclusion program at the Extension Service. Program will be discriminatory. You can go look at that. They have a diversity champion program now. All of this stuff. And,
it's all identity politics. That's what Oregon State University has brought to this. Well, of course, I could say that about the entire state university system, really.
Well, all the land-grant universities, they've just, let's go back to, let's rewind the clock back to 1995. So historically, Josephine County has paid in to the Oregon Extension Service for these programs. And then when we lost our dollars from timber resources, we couldn't do that out of the general fund. So they started this measure 17.58. Now, listen to the question. Here's the ballot title. The Form County 4-H Extension Service District and establish a tax base. To the question, shall Josephine County form a 4-H Extension Service with a tax base? It's on, and when you read the summary and the statement, it's all about 4-H and extension. Now we question how they're using their dollars, and they say, oh, well, there's a lot more to 4-H because all the 4-H kids pretty much left, okay? They're gone. They formed their own group called the Josephine County Youth in Ag.
How many 4-H members are actually left in the in the Josephine County system right now? Do you recall?
Well, in the extension system, it's kind of hard. So in the livestock program, it's like 6 or 10. That's it.
Oh, so it's just a handful of kids, really.
Okay. Right, but there's a little caveat there. But when Measure 1758 was passed, there were 791.
Oh, it's big.
Okay. Now they say, oh, well, there's more to it than the livestock program. Well, that's how it was all sold back then with the young farmers and everything. I was involved with that. My wife and I, we had kids in it. I was a big proponent of 1758. So anyways, now they say, oh, there's 130, because we started this new program called Clover Buds. I said, Clover Buds? What is a Clover Bud? Well, to be in 4-H, you have to be 9 years old. It's 9 to 19. So they started Clover Buds, which is 5 years old to 9. And I go, well, that's not 4-H, because you got to be, oh, well, yeah, but we consider it a 4-H program. So we got 130 kids now. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, when you look at the numbers and when you look how they spend the money, Bill, what this is a hell of a lot of taxpayer dollars going to state employees. And you look at the travel expenses, and I go, they wanted me to approve over $1 million budget. Now, that is just the Josephine County portion of it. If you add in $92,000 from their federal grants and about $225,000 from state grants, that's a lot of money. And I'm like, what do you do with all that money? You don't hardly have any people participating in it. Oh, well, we got the Master Gardeners. I go, that's an adult program, and they pay fees for it, And so was all this money? So when we start digging down, it's basically faculty salaries and travel and, oh, there's professional services. And,
so are you telling me, Herman, Commissioner Bearchigger, that essentially this, what was supposed to be going to kids' programs in 4-H was actually just paying or backfilling Oregon State University's faculty budget for a bunch of wokesters of sorts? I mean,
the extension part, but I challenge you to go look at the Oregon State University Extension Service website. You know, this was all supposed to, when you look in the explanatory statement, it says the purpose is to provide funds for 4-H youth, agriculture, home economics, forestry, community development, and energy programs. So where does that say about diversity, equity, and all of this? That's their number one mission now. What happened to agriculture?
Mm.
So anyways, we said no, and you know, it wasn't a lot of people. I think I had 60-some between my emails and also people that testified. So anyways, we said no. We're not doing it.
Is there a possible, I mean, well, I don't even know if you can answer this, Herman, but why does there seem to be such a controversy in Josephine County, but Jackson County seems to be going along with the flow? I mean, is it a different program in Jackson County? I don't know if you can answer that or not. I might have to ask just some of our commissioners on this.
You know, I think that's because people aren't looking close. Okay. They're not looking close. And you know, this is, they say, well, you know, it's only a little bit, 4 cents on your property tax. You pay for this three ways. You pay for it in your property tax. Then the state funding comes from general fund, mm-hmm. so you pay in your income tax. And the federal funding comes from your income tax. So, you know, these people say, oh, well, you know, if you have the county program, then that leverages state and federal dollars. It's still all taxpayer dollars. Why can't people realize that every single penny that the government spends, they had to take from a citizen? Why can't people understand that concept?
Yeah, well, you got to understand that we have been so, and I'm not saying just we as Oregonians, the entire United States system and the people have been corrupted by this concept of the grant stream fund. Really, I mean,
yes.
We act as if it's just magical money that comes out of nowhere. Look at what the city of Medford does. You know, you get your grants to pave your street when you should be paying for your streets yourself. But in order to pave your streets, you have to, you know, put in the bicycle bumways and the bollards downtown, and you screw everybody else's way. But hey, you got free money, Herman, right? That's the way they tend to look at it.
It's not free. And, you know me, I'm always looking at the big economic picture all the time. And I'll tell you what, people, the middle class is just getting, they're just getting raked over the coals. They don't even realize it. So the rich and everything, they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine. They're going to pay their taxes. But now you know what the rich is doing? They're lending money to the federal government for 5%. The interest next year on the national debt is $1 trillion. And why is that so important? Because that's $1 trillion that really doesn't go to the gross domestic product.
Yeah, that's paying for past sins, essentially.
Right.
That's all it's doing.
And so it doesn't add any value to the economic outlook of the country, to the gross domestic product. See, it's out. And so I'm telling you, the middle class is getting hosed, especially the upper middle class. They're getting, and they won't take it very, you know, Congress has already realized we can't tax them anymore. That's why they're having to borrow this money. We're done being taxed. You'll have a national revolt if you tax much more.
Yeah.
Okay, they know that.
Commissioner Bearchigger with me this morning. Hey, Herman, let's set that aside, and because, yeah, that's baked in the cake right now, and that's one of my concerns.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's Trump or Biden. Neither of them are talking about not spending, truly.
No.
Yeah. So we know that this is, you know, the end game's baked in. Let's take a look at a big court case, though, that affected Southwest Oregon with, you know, the city of Grants Pass v. Johnson. And I know that, of course, you're a county commissioner, but, you know, we all live within under the rule of the Ninth Circuit, and Ninth Circuit got kicked. But I've noticed that OPB reporting that even some moderate Democrats, and I guess there are a couple who aren't just totally crazy, want to join the Republicans and get rid of that 2021 law from the legislature, which more or less took what the Ninth Circuit did in the Boise decision and made it Oregon state law. You think you might be successful at that? Because otherwise, how much is going to change? What do you think?
I think the Democrats will whip them in shape.
You think
so?
I mean,
Ted Wheeler come out and said this isn't going to affect anything in Portland. So, yeah, the Supreme Court gave some latitude to municipalities to deal with this homeless and wrecking our parks and all of this kind of stuff. But it just depends who the leaders are in these communities or the state. So the state passes these laws, then that ties the hands of the local communities. So I think in red states, it's going to help a lot. I think in blue states, nothing's going to change. It's too big of an industry, Bill. Look at all of the nonprofits that make their living by supporting the homeless.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of money going to Democrat operatives for supporting the homeless industrial complex in Southwest Oregon.
Hmm? Yeah, it's like, hey, we're going to give you a free sleeping bag and a free tent. And, oh, by the way, could you fill out this voter registration form? So, anyways, did you know you can use the post office as your address? So
really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, nobody's checking on any of this stuff. You know, you got to check the box, I'm a citizen. Who checks that? Where's the accountability? Ask your county clerk. Do you check to see if they're a citizen? You see their passport, their ID, their birth certificate?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that I was talking with Catherine Engelbrink from True the Vote last hour, and she was saying that a lot of times that, you know, that your governments and your states don't even have access to those databases to really be able to check that. That's what she said.
Well, the Secretary of States are starting to do that. It's just like right now you can go look at look up anybody's voter registration to see how their voters registration and, you know, how they vote, what party they belong to, you know, how many times do they vote in the last 4 years, all that stuff. You don't know what they're voting for. You just know when they're voting. And I see that coming to an end. They're going to pass some kind of legislation that says that's personal information. And you can't look at it. So that's coming. And then you can't, you know. So I don't know.
I hope you're wrong about that, but you could be right. Now, when it comes to, though, the homelessness policies and such, the people are not interested, I think, in continuing to build and fund the homeless industrial complex. I think there's a growing rage that we want to crack down. So are the Democrats just going to defy that? You think that's what's going to happen?
Well, you know, I still think cities like Portland and stuff are just fine with it. It just amazes me how they turn a blind eye to this stuff just because they don't want to say, oh, well, maybe we made a mistake.
Okay, well, they can be an excrement hole city if they wish to be. All right.
Well, yeah, but what they'll do is they'll use the legislature to pass a statewide bill. I'll give an example. The entire state of Oregon is a sanctuary state. So,
right.
So even though in Josephine County, we would love, trust me, we would love to turn these people over to immigration services, but we can't. The sheriff can't even make a phone call. So, you know, that we're stuck. We're stuck because of what the legislature has done.
Maybe what will end up happening is as times get increasingly dicey and you can't borrow yourself out of your hole anymore at the federal level, and, of course, the state can't really do it, right? State can't print currency. Maybe I'm just speculating here, Herman. Maybe you'll see more cities starting to almost, rebel against the state legislature and said, okay, yeah, you're saying we can't. Go ahead and come down here and enforce it. What are you going to do? I don't know. Maybe that's where it goes.
I think the next shoe to drop is unemployment, and the shoe to drop after that is some sort of deflation / stagflation. I mean, if you study history, it always happens this way. And you know, to all of our listening friends out there, from a economic perspective, the worst thing, you think inflation's bad, you watch deflation.
Oh, I don't know about deflation's fine if you have cash. Your cash is worth more.
Yeah, but it's not so good when you own a $400,000 house and you have a $300,000 mortgage, and now it's worth $250,000.
Well, that's that's a problem for the bank. That's what it really is, right? You know, but
that when we start, when the assets start deflating, and you know, we're already seeing some of that stuff. So when you look at the inflation numbers, you know, they're down, you know, 3.1, 2.5%.
But that's not saying prices are going down, Herman. It just means the rate of height.
Because we
is
have
going
all
down.
These sticky, I call it, there are all these sticky things. A sticky thing is like petroleum. A sticky thing is like insurances. They won't follow the trend. They'll continue to go up. That's where we start seeing the stagflation, where some things are going up, other things are going down, along with wages. So, you know, we want more wages. Okay, we're going to give everybody a raise, but now we don't have enough money to keep everybody on board, so we start laying people off. Didn't you see the big layoff at Oregon Health Authority?
Yeah,
and
I know.
So I think the next shoe to drop is unemployment. And when people are unemployed and they're on and they're getting subsidies in their unemployment insurance and stuff, all of a sudden they can't make their house payment, their car payment, their boat payment, and all those other things. So I'm very, 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 very nervous here going, no matter if Trump becomes president or not, these trends, it's a trajectory. And it's,
well, that's why we were talking about earlier on. Many economic trends are baked in the cake still, and they're not going to be reversed by just executive orders, that kind of thing.
No, you might be able to start bending the curve, but you're still going to be going down that road for a while.
Yeah.
So, this is going to be interesting, but I'll tell you what, the policies, not only by Democrats, but lawmakers in general, are really coming home to roost. And you know, I mentioned about the wealthy. Well, you know, the wealthy manipulate our elected officials by saying, hey, you vote for more taxes, you don't do what I say, we're going to put up the money and take you out with another opponent.
Mm-hmm.
The middle class and the poor, they get even by saying, hey, you don't give us free things, you don't give us subsidies and stuff, we're going to take you because we have the number of votes, okay? We have the majority of the people, so we'll vote you out. So the poor legislature, congressman or senator, sitting there going, God, the wealthy can take me out with their money, and the middle class and the poor can take me out with their votes. So now this is where you have deficit spending.
Yeah. And how much longer can they keep that up? We don't know. They've been able to keep the plate spinning for a lot longer than I think many people ever thought they could. But uncharted territory, my friend. Isn't like debt to GDP about 122-140% somewhere in there right now?
Yes. Yep, somewhere in there. And you know, the next 10 years, you know, I mean, you and I are kind of like on the end of the road, you know?
Yeah.
And the rest of our lives, we're going to see these issues, you know? I mean, the greatest times have passed, and I'd say probably one of the best economic periods was when we came out of that 2009 recession. And, hey, we had a good stretch of low interest rates and pretty high-paying jobs, and the economy was doing good up until COVID.
Yeah, but remember, 2000, even then, that artificially low interest rate was really about pushing a lot of malinvestment, brought a lot of consumption forward is all it did. It just pulled it from the future. Was it really organic? Organic good times, or was it just a false feel good time? Hard to say.
I think there's some validity in that statement. Yeah, I think there was some. Yeah, we just can't help ourselves. You know, it's like the kid that has a scoop.
Yeah.
Look, and I'm going to take another scoop.
Yep.
So that's kind of what's going.
I just know that in 2025, whoever is president may regret being president at some point. Just saying. Whoever's there, either Biden or the people running Biden or someone who replaces Biden, although it appears the soft coup was not successful. They're kind of, you know, closing rank around him again. And whether it's President Trump, you know, who knows? Of course, we don't even know they're going to put him in jail yet, do we?
Like you said, whoever's president, we get into a world confrontation. Who's going to pay for that?
I don't know. You know? I don't know. But, well, get the popcorn, Herman. Keep observing. We'll have you back, all right? You have a great fourth.
Hey, Phil, I really appreciate this opportunity, you know, to kind of get the facts out. You know, I know I'm always harping on the kerning, but you got to understand my position. When they don't get the truth in their articles, I get people saying, well, why'd you do that? And I got to spend 15 minutes telling them reason why. And they go, oh, I see. Well, I don't, you know how hard that is to spend 15 minutes when every person has a question? So that's why I really harp on the Courier. It just does us an injustice not to get the facts.
Correct. All right. Well, you know, here we are. Thanks so much, Herman.
There we are, Bill.
Be well. It's 4 minutes after 8. This is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, 99.3 KBXG Grants Pass. Also, K290 AF Rogue River. That's where you can listen to all of KMED's talk programming at 105.9 in Grants Pass, City of Grants Pass. Translator K294 AS Ashland for South Jackson County.